Hello, strong, feisty women. Some of you may recognize my voice. I'm Celine Yeager, host of the Hit Play Not Pause podcast. Throughout my career as a professional health and fitness writer and now a podcaster, I hear countless questions from women who are trying to understand how their ever-changing hormones impact their sports performance. So we decided to serve up some answers in a brand new series called Hormonal that we will be releasing on the Feisty Women's Performance Podcast feed. Throughout this four-part series, reproductive endocrinologist Dr. Carla DiGirolamo and I will be tackling topics like periods, the pill, pregnancy, and conditions like PCOS, all from the perspective of sports performance. If you aren't already, follow the Feisty Women's Performance Podcast and stay tuned for our first episode releasing on April 15th. Also, have questions you want answered? Send us a voice note at speakpipe.com/hormonal and we'll get it answered on the show.
Welcome to the Feisty Women's Performance Podcast. I'm your host, Sarah Gross, Ironman champion, PhD in women's history, and founder and CEO of Feisty Media. I started this show because I wanted to cut through the BS of diet culture and fitness culture and actually learn from high-achieving women at the top of their game who have figured out how to feel and perform their best at every stage of life. So I chat with experts, elite athletes, and leaders who have learned to succeed despite the massive gender data gap in exercise and medical science and product development. Every episode is filled with information, advice, and anecdotes that will help you fulfill your potential as an athlete, mom, leader, or business owner. And listen up, if you don't subscribe to our Women's Performance newsletter, you are definitely missing out. It's totally free. So head over to womensperformance.com and subscribe now. That's womensperformance.com. This podcast is a production of Feisty Media.
Hi, Feisties. I've noticed that we have some new listeners these past few weeks, and I just want to say welcome and thank you for being here. I hope that you will find these episodes helpful, either in a way that directly supports your physical and mental health or your journey of ongoing learning and growth. If we can do one or both of those things, I think our time together and our time with our guests as well has been well spent. I also want to say, if anyone has suggestions for guests or topics that you'd like covered here, please send them my way by emailing me directly at Sarah, S-A-R-A, no H, at livefeisty.com. I have two producers for the show. They are called Millie and Carrie, and one of them will make sure that we get that email address in the show notes so that you can reach me if you do have suggestions. Okay, so we have a fun episode this week. My guest is a pool free diver from Australia called Jordan, or Jordy Duncan. Jordy is a four-time national Australian record holder and was Australian national freediving champion in 2022. So she knows what she's doing underwater. I've always had like this fascination with freediving, partially just because holding your breath for as long as they do is insane, and I wanted to understand how they do it. And also because I kind of had an assumption that freediving must provide some sense of calm and control over oneself, and that there must be a meditative aspect to the sport, and I was super curious about that. Jordy unpacks this for us and is also very open about what freediving does for her mental health and how her love for the sport helped her overcome a severe eating disorder and alcoholism. I hope that you all will find her story relatable. I certainly did. In particular, the way that sport functions in her life as an outlet to help her calm her what sounds like an extremely active mind. I found Jordy through one of our longtime Feisty partners, Orca Sportswear, and I just wanted to take a minute to thank them as well. Orca first approached me at the Ironman World Championships in Kona in 2018 because they were launching some new women's lines and wanted to make sure they were getting things right for the actual female athletes. Orca makes wetsuits and other swim gear across all kinds of different sports, from triathlon, surfing, open water swimming, and free diving. And I know that one of their goals is not just to like shrink the men's designs and call them women's, but to really do the proper research and development to make sure their women's suits are for women. So big shout out and appreciation to Orca. So thanks again for being here, and let's chat with Jordy. Hey, Jordy, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm excited.
I'm so excited too. You know, free diving, like I was just saying to you before we started recording, like free diving is something that I've always been kind of super curious about and have never done. So I'm very excited to talk to you today.
Yeah. If I'm perfectly honest, I had never even heard of free diving until 2.5 years ago. So,
oh, wow.
The fact that you've heard about it and you know about it, it's good.
Cool. Okay. Well, we can learn together then. So for our audience, what is free diving?
So I guess when people think of free diving, they first think about either like a platform over a pool diving, or their mind immediately goes to the ocean depth. But free diving is actually just simply being underwater, holding your breath without a breathing apparatus. Mm-hmm. So that could be in the ocean or in the pool. And I guess there are two main types of free diving. There is depth, uh-huh. and then there's pool, which is either for distance, so the number of laps you can do in a pool on one breath, or for time, so you're basically still floating on the surface face down holding your breath.
I see. And you do the pool versions, am I right?
I do, yeah. At the moment, Australia doesn't have the best conditions for training depth, and it's quite challenging to be able to train and compete in both. There's a few elite athletes now that are doing both, and they're at the top of both. But yeah, in Australia, we just don't have that depth. We've got sharks. We've got not great visibility.
You don't want to go down there. You
know.
Hilarious. Okay, so how did you figure out you were good at this? I mean, were you a swimmer who just kind of realized that you could hold your breath for a long time? Like, what's your story?
Yeah, so I was a swimmer, a competitive swimmer when I was younger, up until I was 15, and then I quit, and I was so burnt out, and I really resented the pool that I didn't swim another lap for about 15 years. Mm-hmm. And then just after my 30th birthday, I don't know what it was at that point in time, but I felt like it was time to get back in the water. I felt like I'd, like I wasn't holding on to that stuff anymore. And so I got back in the pool and started swimming, you know, just recreationally.
I was just going to ask as you were talking there, and we'll go back to, sorry, what you were saying, but, you said let go of that stuff. Was that kind of like some baggage from swimming?
Yeah. So I guess swimming for me, like I was a swimmer. That's who I felt that I was, and that's what people knew me as. And then when I quit, you know, I was at a really vulnerable age, 15, female, and I lost my sense of identity, and I didn't know, like, up until that point, my life was wake up, train, go to school, train, homework, eat, bed, repeat. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I was very lost. And then I also, going through puberty, gained quite a lot of weight, not having had to really worry about controlling my portion sizes before or whatever, because I was training so much. So from then, I started developing disordered eating patterns, anxiety, just really low self-esteem, all of that stuff. And so from about 20 to 30, I would say, I struggled with quite severe bulimia, and I was drinking a lot, like every day.
Mm.
So yeah, a lot of stuff. And I blamed swimming, I guess, and the pool on those things. You know, as an adult now, I can, you know, rationalize, and, you know, I know that it's got to do with my personality type, my genes, the environment I grew up in, the, you know, the people I had around me, all sorts of different things. But when I was going through that time, it was swimming that caused that for me.
Well, yeah. And we talk, we're off script here, but I like that. We talk a lot about that on this podcast, because I think like almost all of our guests who are athletes have had some kind of, and myself included, have had some kind of like disordered eating disorder along the way to being an elite athlete, or like you said, like after being an elite athlete. Yeah. So you were saying that you found your, but sometimes sport can help us like find our way back or whatever. Is that what free diving did for you?
Absolutely. Like I would even go as far as to say that it's been a lifeline for me. Mm-hmm. So how I found out about free diving, I went on a date with a guy and we both figured out we had a lot in common, both from Townsville, both swimmers by background. And I'd just done a scuba diving certification. And he said, well, if you can, you know, if you love scuba and you're a swimmer, you should try free diving. And I was like, what is this thing called free diving? And it turned out that he has a business, a free diving school. So I did a course with my stepdad and I loved it. So you do one day in the pool and then one day in the ocean. And it just felt like, it felt like I'd never left the water. It felt like I was meant to be there. And as soon as I finished my course, I started researching whether there were any clubs that trained in Brisbane where I'm based. Mm-hmm. And there's two. So I joined both. I'm a dual member. And the rest is history, I guess you could say.
Yeah. Do you find that the culture of free diving, you know, in those clubs that you joined at that time, are they pretty inclusive, or was there less pressure there than you felt when you were swimming as a young person?
Yeah. Like I think even in the 2 years that I've been free diving, a lot's changed. It's progressed a lot. But definitely when I started, I would say it was almost like a hack sport. Like there were maybe one or two Aussie free divers who had been doing free diving for a long time, one in particular, and she's very good at it. But other than that, people just kind of would come and go at training or didn't. And still, people are still working out what the best training routine is for free diving performance. But yeah, definitely, like we don't have a coach on the side, you know, go, or, you know, on your back, which I actually think would be a good thing for me. I think it'd be a good motivation to have someone, you know, pushing me. But
yeah, as I was reading a little more about free diving this morning, one of the things that kept coming up was around mental health and how it's something that people do tend to do for their mental health. Have you found that there's a connection there? And what do you think that is?
Yeah, for sure. So people free dive for a lot of different reasons. So there's the competitive side of things. Then there's like those who enjoy the ocean and want to dive to see the marine life. We've got a lot of spear fishermen and women who come and they want to improve their breath hold for spear fishing. Mm-hmm. And then there's those that do it for the relaxation and the mental benefits side of things. And I definitely think for me personally, so you might notice, but I'm pretty fast paced. I struggle with anxiety still day to day, but when I'm free diving training and I'm in the moment, I'm fully focused on that, what I'm doing in that present moment. And it's the only thing for me. Like I've tried other things, you know, I can't even read a book and fully get engaged in the book or like coloring in or anything. There's nothing like it.
I love that. I bet it could help so many people. I started doing cold therapy, cold immersion. And I find, there must be some, I'm going to ask about your training in a minute, but I find that has the same overlap for me. It's like just, yeah. And with cold therapy, I was listening to a podcast this morning that it was Andrew Huberman who was saying that like, actually, You know who I mean?
I love that. Yeah, he's great.
Yeah, amazing. And like he was saying how it's some of it is just about the putting yourself in a situation where you're uncomfortable for longer and longer periods of time. And I can imagine, like I saw on your Instagram, for example, that you can hold your breath for 6 minutes. Like talk about making yourself uncomfortable. How did you learn to do that?
I think so. I guess I started at a pretty good point. I think in my course, I did a 4-minute breath hold and the instructor stopped me then because it's a beginner course. So you're not allowed to do any longer than that. So I guess I was starting swimming background was helpful. Mm-hmm. And then I don't know. I remember static apnea was the discipline that I first started. And that's the one where you're still and you're floating face down for time. And it was like my favorite part of my week. You know, I'd go at the end of the day after work and I'd just look forward to it. And it was my, you know, few minutes of just me time and my happy place. And that was how I associated statics. It was my happy place. And then I guess I just like you train for it, right? There's training CO2 tolerance and then there's O2 tolerance. And you can train for both. It's a little bit different. So I was fortunate that I could, when I was very new, I started training with a partners that had been freediving for a little while and they had a program. So I kind of jumped on the back of that. This is before I got my own coach. But I did struggle at the start. I would say in my first year of freediving, coming from a swimming mindset where you push and you push and you push until you got nothing left. So in my mind, I knew that physically my muscles had the ability to do this distance that I wanted to do. And, you know, like I could do it in training or like the time that I wanted to do, but then because I was still struggling with bulimia at the time as well. And free diving, you can't just, it's not just your body that you've got to rest, but your nervous system and your mind. Mm-hmm. So I learnt the hard way. I had a couple of blackouts in competitions early on. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I realized pretty quickly that if I wasn't healthy and didn't get my health on track, then I wasn't going to be able to perform to the best of my ability in free diving. And it was really frustrating and upsetting for me because quite often I'd be doing these times and distances in training where I was, I guess, more relaxed and then come to a competition environment where I had this heightened level of stress and anxiety. So yeah, I had to change my lifestyle.
Wow. Okay. So you just said there you blacked out a couple times. And is that, and I can totally see the connection there between like under eating, bulimia, the alcohol, like you said, how did you overcome that bulimia? How did you, or did you?
Yeah. So like, I would say, I say recovery from eating disorders is possible, but I'm not sure that the neural pathways ever go away. So what I mean by that is like, it's always an option. Whereas for someone who's never struggled with an eating disorder or any kind of addiction, I would compare it to they, when they're in a stressful situation or whatever it is, they have a default to go to do something else that is not take drugs, alcohol, or restrict eating or overeat and then get rid of it kind of thing. So I guess the turning point for me was these consecutive blackouts that I was having. And I loved freediving so much and I really wanted to see what my potential was, but I knew, and I had people around me, you know, worried, and my family. So my family saw my first blackout at a competition and they were mortified. They couldn't understand why I would want to do this sport. Mm-hmm. And also my coach Semo Urenko, he knew from the beginning when he took me on that I was struggling with this, and he's the best thing that I did. He is just so strict on like my rest. I have to have 2 rest days and that's non-negotiable. And like, he's always reminding me about getting enough sleep and eating healthy is the most important thing. Mm-hmm. And then I guess the key thing that changed for me, or like an opportunity that I was given, was my mom and my stepdad offered for me to move in with them for a couple of weeks because I was moving into a new apartment with a friend in like a month's time. And we knew how difficult that was going to be for me going from the lifestyle that I had to living with someone else and either continuing that lifestyle or trying on my own to break the cycle. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, those few weeks with my mom and my stepdad were I just can't thank them enough. Just having people there, just having that support. And I think the third day was like the toughest day and I had headaches. They were there and they were cooking me healthy meals, and it really broke that cycle for me.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. So having other people that care about you around you, helping break the cycle. You mentioned earlier about rewiring the neural pathways. Like, are there things that you would actively do to try to create new neural pathways or healthier ones?
Yeah, I guess, like free diving for me is that it's, I know that I can't do what I was doing and then go and train in the pool. It's kind of a waste of a session because I know now and I'm smart enough not to push past my limits. So I don't, mm-hmm. But then I'm not giving 100%. So what's the point?
Right. So it's really for you, like that really sounds, it was about having goals that you and things that you wanted to do, you know, right. That you weren't going to be able to do if you continued with those habits.
Yeah, for sure.
That's fantastic. What is, you know, what does the training actually look like for free diving? I know you're a pool free diver, and I read a bit about what, like some of the elite athletes, what their training looks like. It's quite impressive. What does your training look like?
So yeah, it's like a combination of gym and pool training. As I said, I'm training only 5 days a week with the 2 rest days, mm-hmm. and then like the number of sessions that I'm doing and the kind of split between pool and gym depends on, I guess, how far out from a competition or a peak period. So that split will depend on that. Mm-hmm. I mentioned before also like CO2 and O2 training. So the training for to build up your CO2 tolerance is like a lot of short rest stuff. Sprints with short rest. High volume, and then the O2 stuff, as you get closer to competitions, you'll start doing the longer dives, longer rest, less, you know, volume in the training. So you kind of periodize it like that.
Right. And does it, when you say you have 2 days off, do you do a 3-day training block and then a day off and then a 2-day training block and a day off?
What am I doing at the moment? Yes. 3 days day off. 2 days day off. Yeah.
And then on the on days, are you training a couple times per day?
Usually not. Again, my coach is really big on not doing like a big pool session and a gym session in the same day. Like,
right.
Yeah, we're trying to, I guess, ensure that I'm well rested for every session and so that I can give 110% every session. Mm-hmm. But I guess, yes, if I didn't work full time, I always feel like I'm not doing enough. Like I'm always having this discussion with my coach about, I want to do more. I want to be able to fit in this many of like this discipline, because there's 4 disciplines. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to train this many times and do this X many times a week. And he's like, you can't. Like if the situation was different and I worked part-time, mm-hmm. maybe, mm-hmm. but you just can't manage. You have to be realistic.
Yeah, I like that sense of balance.
As we head into summer, rest and recovery are critical for improving sports performance, reducing stress, and living a long and healthy life. We should all invest in better sleep. So, think about the thing you lay your head on for 8 hours a night. If it's not exactly right for you, it can lead to needless tossing and turning, or worse, have you waking up with an unrelenting kink in your neck. My new Lagoon pillow has helped me improve my sleep immensely by pairing me with the performance pillow that has everything I need. So I personally was matched with the Otter pillow. Shout out to Team Otter, which I love because it has a gentle cooling effect. And I was able to choose how much stuffing I wanted in it, which is super important to me because I'm doing a decent amount of CrossFit these days and my shoulders are kind of creaky. So having a pillow that is stuffed just to the right height keeps my neck and head in exactly the right position and comfortable for the entire night. And as of fall 2023, Lagoon launched their 100% mulberry silk pillowcases. It's cool to the touch, buttery soft, and great for your skin and hair. You've got to go check out this pillowcase if you want to feel great and look great every morning. Waking up for morning workouts has never felt better. I'm refreshed and pain-free thanks to my Lagoon pillow. To check it out for yourself, go to lagoonsleep.com/performance and take the 2-minute sleep quiz to find your perfect pillow match. And then use the code PERFORMANCE for 15% off your first purchase. That's code PERFORMANCE at lagoonsleep.com/performance, whole 15% off, and the link is in the show notes. You can just click through there.
Endurance sports should be accessible to everyone, right? That's why we are so excited to be partnering with Motive. Motive is one of the fastest growing training apps in the world today, with thousands of amateur athletes signing up every month and a nearly perfect 4.9 star rating in the App Store. You are not a template and your training plan should not be either. Prepare for running races, triathlons, cycling events, duathlons, or swim runs, however your season schedule shapes up, and get training written by some of the best coaches in the world in each discipline who know what it takes to help amateur athletes reach their goal on race day. The app takes the training written by those experts and then creates the most optimal training plan for your schedule, abilities, and goals. Plus, the training is fully customized to your race schedule. How much you can train each week, your current abilities, and the goals you want to achieve in your race. You can use the app for free as long as you want, or get all the upgraded features from the app for just $19.99 a month. But as a feisty listener, you can sign up at mymotive.com and use the code FEISTY for 2 months of full premium access. That's right, you get 2 months of premium for free. So you quite literally have nothing to lose. So head over to mymotive.com, mymotive.com, and use the code FEISTY, FEISTY. And on a personal note, I know the founder of Motive, and he is driven to make triathlon and all endurance sports more accessible for the athletes who care about their performance, but who aren't quite ready for a full-time personal coach. If that sounds like you, definitely try the app for 2 months for free. You literally have nothing to lose. Yeah. Okay. So tell us, I know I cut you off earlier when you were describing what free diving is, but tell us what the four disciplines are.
Okay. Yeah. So four disciplines in pool, four disciplines in depth as well, really. So in the pool, there is dynamic monofin, which is like the big mermaid tail, and you do a dolphin kick with your arms in streamline. Cool. So that's for distance. Mm-hmm. Then there's dynamic with bifins. So they're the two long flippers, again, for distance. Mm-hmm. Then the third dynamic discipline is no fins, and it's kind of like a modified breaststroke. So just not breathing, I guess.
And are you fully submerged?
Fully.
Okay.
Yeah. So we wear weights around our neck and or waist to keep us neutrally buoyant. So we sort of sit in the middle, not at the bottom and not at the top of the pool. Yeah. And then the fourth pool discipline is static apnea, which is the literally, if someone saw you, they'd probably think you were dead floating on the surface of the of the water. And then in depth competitions, so similar, constant weight monofin. So that's going down with the monofin mermaid tail, constant weight bifins with the two flippers going down.
Yeah.
Then there's free immersion, which is, so no fins, and there's a line and you're using your arms to pull yourself down to the bottom plate. And then the fourth one, what am I forgetting? No fins as well. So constant weight, no fins, like breaststroke. Yeah.
And I was watching one of your videos this morning where you did 157 meters with, I think, monofin. Is that
bifins? I think that must have been my first competition that I did. Yeah, bifins.
Right. I don't know how I found that one, but that's what came up when I Googled you this morning.
Yeah. Okay. Yep.
What I was wondering is, like, as you know, as a swimmer, I think we all have this experience as kids, like in the pool of like, let's see who can hold their breath the longest or swim to the other side. I wondered, like, how do you decide when you're going to come up? You know, like, do you know, okay, do you get signals that are like, okay, I'm done here, you know, and what are those signals and what signals do you ignore? And then how do you know when to breathe?
Yeah, that's the secret question. and it's something that you have to learn by experience. Mm-hmm. And for me, when I started, like I mentioned, I had that swimmer's mentality, very good at pushing through pain, blocking out, not that we don't feel pain, but discomfort, I should say, but very good at blocking stuff out. So when I get to that point where it felt hard and I was having contractions or it was feeling uncomfortable, you know, I'd be like, suck it up, Jordan, keep going, keep pushing. Mm-hmm. And you can't. That's how it ends in a blackout. So you have to really tune in is the only way I can explain it. And when I was trying to learn what my signals were and my signs to come up, I had to, at the beginning of my dive, I had to say to myself, all right, Jordan, you've got to tune in. You need to feel everything. You need to feel all the discomfort and feel everything so that you know when you need to come up. Mm-hmm. And it's different for each free diver. Like, some people talk about getting tunnel vision. Some people might lose their like hearing. For me, I guess it's kind of indescribable, but definitely if I'm like right on the edge, I'll start to feel a little tingly or something. And then I know like I've got to get up quickly. Mm-hmm. But it's, yeah, it's a fine balance with depth. Before they do their dive, they have to set a target depth. And so there's a plate at that depth and they can't go any deeper than that.
Right.
Whereas, cause like they've got to go down and then still get back up. Mm-hmm. But whereas in the pool, there's no set distance. So you can go as far as you want, but I guess, yeah, you're a lot closer to the surface to come up.
Right. So interesting. I'm going to ask about sort of being a woman in free diving, you know, do you feel like it's a pretty gender equal sport, and do sponsorships come as easily to women as men? Does the media cover the women as much as men?
Yeah. So yeah, I guess, I think it's changed a lot in the last few years. Coming out of COVID, the elite women freedivers are really strong and they're catching up to the men. So, you know, the proof is in the pudding. They're not that far behind anymore. It's still male dominated, but I definitely think it's getting better. In Australia, we don't get any media coverage for freediving.
Right.
As far as I'm aware, we don't get, no, I don't think anyone gets financial assistance, like actual pay for sponsorships. But overseas, like in Europe, definitely there are some free divers who live, like they don't work. They're a professional free diver and they do that full time. Lucky them. But yeah, to answer your question, I think it's definitely a lot better now. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I associate free diving with women. I'm not sure why. I think maybe because my entry point was a documentary about a female. And I don't remember much about it, but it was at least 10 years ago about a female free diver. So I just associate. And maybe it's like kind of like the mermaid connotation that I have with it or whatever.
There are some iconic female free divers and just like super strong, really inspiring women at the moment.
And you, speaking of sponsorship, you and Feisty Media have a sponsor in common, Orca. Do you use their products?
Yes, I do. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I have been wearing Orca wetsuits pretty much all of this year. It would have been sooner than that. We started chatting about this time last year, maybe a little earlier, and they let me know that they, you know, they wanted to work together and they wanted to get me their new line of freedive wetsuits to wear, which is the Orca Zen and the Orca Mantra. But I think originally it was meant to be launched in January or February, and then it got pushed back to May. So I ended up buying one of the older model Orca Free wetsuits at that point. So I was wearing that, and I love that wetsuit, and I wore it yesterday and it's just got a hole in it after 12 months. After all this time, and I'm so sad. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I broke my most recent two dynamic records in the Orca Free and then the Orca Zen.
Oh, cool. Okay. And what are those two records?
So the first one was dynamic monofin. Mm-hmm. So 209 meters.
Wow.
And then the second one was dynamic bifins, 200 meters. So monofins, typically people can do a little bit further. It's a bit quicker.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I can't even imagine that with any fin, you know, going that far, holding your breath. That's pretty, do you train to actually, cause I know like, you know, when you're actually moving in the water, you're using oxygen to create that movement, right? Do you actually train to move more efficiently?
Yeah. So this is an interesting question, because obviously if you have nice technique, mm-hmm. it uses less energy. But I try and have this conversation with my coach all the time, because I want to have perfect technique. My coach says, no, your technique's good. It's beautiful. And he says, because we're not moving fast, we're going slow. Technique doesn't matter so much. It's an interesting one, but I would rather have beautiful technique.
It's something that I think about when I'm just thinking of the last time I did a hold your breath competition with a friend at the pool, I'm thinking like the only thing I was thinking about was like how efficient I am doing my whatever underwater thing I was doing to try to get to the other side, you know?
Yeah. And I guess I wouldn't call it technique per se with the static discipline, but definitely like the more relaxed you are, the longer you're going to be able to hold your breath.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so for our audience, you know, what are some of the things that you've learned through freediving that you apply in your everyday life and that you would suggest for others?
I guess it sounds really cliche, but for me is just being more in the present moment, mm-hmm. just being here right now. You know, what do you feel? What's around you? Mm-hmm. Not thinking about rushing to get to work, what's next, that kind of thing. I think also, and I definitely don't make enough time, or not any time really, but the power of the breath, just slow breathing, and it slows your heart rate. And the interesting thing that I've found is before a competition dive, if I'm nervous, which I'm always nervous, and my heart could be pounding and going 100 mile an hour, but if I can control my breathing and keep that kind of, you know, normal, then it doesn't really affect my dive that much.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting how like loads of things come back to breathing, right?
Yeah, exactly.
If we can breathe well and center ourselves, then it can help with so many things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Free diving has given me a lot. It's given me a lot of joy. It's, you know, given me my health back and the people that I've met, and you know, like-minded people all over the world who share this common passion, and generally most people are pretty supportive. It's really nice community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how do you like decide what your next goals are?
Oh, this is a tough one for next year, for 2023, for the last 2 years. So every year at the end of the year, I write down my goals for the next year, for freediving and otherwise. And for my first 2 years of freediving, I kind of knew what I wanted to achieve. But for 2023, I don't really have specific distances or times in mind. I just want to do, I want to better myself. But my big goal is to go to Pool World Championships in June. I was invited to go this year in 2022. I finished in the top 10 in the bifins discipline, but I couldn't really afford to go. And at the time, COVID was still a bit uncertain. There were a few reasons, but it was mostly financial, I guess. So I'm really hoping that I can get a financial sponsor to help me get to Pool World Championships 2023. It's in South Korea.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Cool. How competitive are the World Championships? Like, how many people will be there in each of the categories, and how do you qualify?
It's getting bigger. I wish I had a figure. In October, I had the opportunity to go to Turkey, and commentate the Depth World Championships there. And they had 140 athletes, which was the largest ever Depth World Championship.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Pool, there's more. Pool's a bigger competition. And in regard to qualifying, each country kind of has their own criteria, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I actually spoke about this the other day, but so for example, Italy, their qualifier is that athletes have to do 90% or more of the world record. So they only take the most elite, like no one in Australia would qualify under that criteria. Uh-huh. In Australia, we're just talking about that at the moment, because we've never really had a situation where there's been more people wanting to go than, you know, spots available. We've never had to select. Mm-hmm. But I think this in 2023, it will be the case. So I think they're looking at maybe taking the top three ranked athletes for each discipline, male and female, and then maybe leaving a couple of additional spots open. Not sure how they'll determine or select those three. Mm-hmm. But yeah, all different sort of criteria across the world.
Right. Amazing. Well, thank you, Jordan. I just want to wish you good luck for everything in 2023. And thank you for sharing your story with bulimia and how you worked your way out of that. Really appreciate it and appreciate you. So thank you.
Thank you so much for having me, Sarah.